Welcome to Hormone Health Podcast, brought to you by Georgia Hartman and Chloe Sheehan.
This podcast is an extension of Hormone Health Studio, which is our naturopathic clinic based here in Newcastle and online.
We're just two naturopaths who love a laugh, coffee, croissants, and conversations about real people with real health concerns.
Nothing's off limits. We're here to educate you on what's happening in your body, share emerging research, and debunk buried health misconceptions.
So sit back and let us do the talking. Hopefully you caught our recent podcast episode number 25, Chloe.
Yeah. Yes. Yep, 25.
With Dr. Melanie Jackson, who is the co-host of The Great Birth Rebellion. If you did, then this episode is exciting because we are speaking to the other co-host of The Great Birth Rebellion. Her name is Bernadette Lack. We call her B. She calls herself B. And she is a midwife. We call her B. B is a midwife, creator and founder of Core and Floor Restore, and the co-creator of Motheration. Two companies centered around enabling you to feel the very best version of yourself emotionally and physically. She is also an author, educator, and like I said, the co-host of the Great Birth Rebellion podcast. Her favorite roles in life, though, are being a lover to her husband and mother to her two epic children. And today's episode is super exciting. It kind of took a different path than what we initially thought, but Chloe and I both personally learned so much from Bea.
We thought we were going to talk about just the pelvic floor in terms of the pelvic floor throughout pregnancy, the pelvic floor in your postpartum period, but we got so much more than that. And you will hear in this podcast, B, ask me a question, what do I want from birth? And it really sort of made me take a step back because I didn't know. And I think that's, you know, that's really important that we ask ourselves these questions or take that sort of next step. Just because it's hard or these questions are hard doesn't mean that you shouldn't investigate them a bit further. But this podcast, we're talking to be all about incontinence, prolapse, pelvic girdle pain, birth transformation, and her work with Motheration, all about postpartum rage, all sorts of things.
Yeah, I'm too excited to keep giving more intros. Let's just get straight into it. Thank you so much, Bea, for joining us on the podcast. Let's kick it off. We want to know, and our audience wants to know, who you are and how you got into this field.
So I'm a midwife and have been a midwife all over Australia. So I've worked in big tertiary hospitals. I've worked in publicly funded home birth in Alice Springs and Melbourne. I've worked in remote Aboriginal communities. I've worked overseas as an educator. I volunteered for a year. We lived in the Solomon Islands and lived the proper village life. Like when people talk about the village, I lived that. I lived in a leaf hut with no door, no running water, no electricity for a whole year. It was wild, and my experiences there were some of the best I've had ever. So I did midwifery for a really long time. And whilst I was a midwife, I was also incontinent. So I was incontinent of urine from the age of 19. And I was running marathons and never leaked when I ran. I just leaked, I leaked when I sneezed. And then as I progressed throughout my 20s, I leaked when I coughed. And it was my dirty little secret that I kept hidden from the world because that, you know, was shameful and taboo at that time. Well, that was my belief system around it. I would talk as a midwife to people about incontinence, and sometimes I would disclose it to them if they had disclosed it to me, just that whole feeling seen and not alone. And I really advocated for all that I knew at that time, which was Kegels. Didn't do them that often myself, did them occasionally, but kind of just ignored it, as we often do, I think, especially when we're young, like if I ignore this, it'll go away. And as I approached my 30s, we wanted to have our own children. We'd been foster parents for a while, but we wanted to have our own. And so I took myself off secretly, did not tell my partner, to see a physiotherapist. And I did that in Melbourne. And I got three basic tips, which were to do my Kegels, stop running, and wait 6 months to get pregnant. And I mean, I look at that advice now, and I think it was what was available at the time. We're talking 2017. And I mean, if you really want to understand this topic, you just have to Google how many research papers have been done on impotence. So, you know, erectile dysfunction, and what has been done in the women's health space. And you know, it's phenomenal.
And the ads, when you think about incontinence, are the grandmas wearing, you know, the big pads, or that's sort of where that word incontinence goes to for some people.
Yeah, and the messaging around it, which is, yeah, it's for old people and there's nothing you can do about it and you just have to wear pads, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's typically our exposure to it. I look back and I'm like, for an intelligent woman that had access to so much, I had access to so little.
Yeah.
At the same time. And it wasn't anything, we didn't cover any of this in midwifery. Like, I didn't know what a prolapse was. I'd been a midwife for 10 years and we didn't talk about prolapse. I feel like we're only just starting to really talk about it. Diastasis recti, like things like that. Like, we checked it, and the way we got taught to check is just something I would not advocate for now, but it's a tick box on the postnatal sheet of paper. You tick the box, you do an assessment, which is not appropriate to do an assessment at that time. I wasn't doing assessments properly. Like, I was sticking my fingers under people's ribs and that was it, you know, and you're doing it at a time where people have just gone through the biggest transformation of their life. Their transformation isn't often complete. They're in a state of, what just happened to me? What do you mean I have to take this human home and raise it on my own? Like, you know, most people are in a state of shock. They're in a state of sympathetic nervous system domination. They're not in a space where they have the capacity to receive information, and we just load with pamphlets and then send people home. And this is the biggest issue I have with postpartum, is that no one owns the space, and it's not publicly funded either. I mean, we talk about this all the time now. I can imagine, you know, so many of your listeners are aware of it too, but the amount of appointments you get in pregnancy, what you get postpartum, and what is actually covered in those postpartum appointments. Typically it's return to sex via the discussion of contraception, without actually looking at the whole person. I did the things that I was told to do half-heartedly, became pregnant, got morning sickness at 6 weeks, was ecstatic that I had morning sickness, thought it was so exciting for the first day, and that went off very, very quickly. And look, I would have had I didn't ever diagnose it, but it would have been hyperemesis. I was covered in vomit. I would vomit just by rolling over in bed. It was horrendous. And I was working home birth at the time, and all I had was those big surfboard pads. So every time I vomited, I would wet myself. And so I was covered in urine and vomit pretty much up until 30 weeks of pregnancy, with severe pelvic girdle pain as well, which makes complete sense, because it's all connected. And people often don't realize that. You know, they're like, no, my pelvic floor is fine, but I've had really bad pelvic girdle pain. It's like, that's that whole pelvis. You know, pelvic girdle pain is part of pelvic floor dysfunction. As is back pain, right? And we just don't see that, those connections. So pregnancy was really traumatic. I got to a point where I wanted a termination. I don't think I ever would have gone through it, but that just, and I tell that story to tell of the mental health state that I was in.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's really hard to get rid of a big urine surfboard pad at people's houses. So my legs were just excoriated from constantly being in contact with urine. I must have stunk so bad. I always refer to myself as, like, they must have called me the pissy pants midwife. Like, everyone must have knew, but also people are so caught up in themselves when they're giving birth that thankfully, so hopefully they didn't notice.
It's not probably not something that I'm very proud of, but I'd say every area in my house that has a capacity to sit on, I think I've weed or vomited on it. from being pregnant. It's just like you have no choice. It's like it will just catch you when you're feeling unwell, and it's just like, well, what can you do? Like, you don't want to vomit on something, but then also at the same time you're trying to like hold
there's a lot going on.
Yeah, you're trying to control both ends of your, you know, well, it depends. But both ends of that gastrointestinal tract, I guess, and respiratory tracts. Mm. So pregnancy was really traumatic. People, you know, often talk about birth trauma, but I had pregnancy trauma. It was really hard. And I had planned a home birth, and I was really questioning my ability to birth because I couldn't even sneeze. So. Yeah. It messed with me. It messed with me hard. And my husband caught on to the fact that I was wetting myself because he'd walk around the corner and I'd, you know, go to vomit in the sink and wet myself. And I remember the first time he saw it, he was just like, I'll go get the mop. And he was super supportive. But it was like my secret got out without choice.
Or solution. Like, it just seems like it was...
Yeah, at the time there didn't feel like there was a solution. Yeah. Look back now and I'm like, oh, there is so much that I could have done for myself. Yeah. But we didn't really know it as a world either. Yeah. We've come far very quickly and we're still very stuck in those old ways in modern mainstream care for sure. And which we know that it takes, I mean, we're getting better. It used to be like 17 years for research to get into practice. We've shortened that to around 10 to 14, depending on what area you're in, but still like 10 years, that's a long time to wait when you're wetting yourself. So I ended up smashing my birth. I had an incredible home birth and that, you know, really put me back into my power, which is what birth is meant to do. And most people don't get that. And just a lot of love to those that are robbed. But I found my power again and I did what I do best. I'm a published author through academia. I love academia. Thought I'd have my PhD by now, but life has put me on a different
course. Not yet.
not yet. And yeah, it's there's still a calling to do it, but there's so much work I am involved in and want to be involved in. So it's just picking which one you do, right? Yeah. But yeah, I do want to give back to the research world because I do see it's a huge way of us going forward. But did a lot of research on, like, it did not make sense to me that we would squeeze a muscle and just release it. Like, we don't do that for any other part of the body. It never landed well for me. I was like, this can't be the answer. And probably at that point of my life, there was probably some anger because Kegels were developed by a male obstetrician called Dr. Arnold Kegel. And I was like, a man telling a woman what to do in this space. Like, there was a lot, I think, that just made me want to dig deeper. And so I started looking.
Sorry, I was just going to say, like, it's so true. Like, there's even when we think about the fallopian tubes, that's named after a gynecologist as well. And it's like when you sort of break it down, a lot of these female-based origins are rooted in males, like, because there wasn't the female researchers back then.
And also how they found them.
Yeah, exactly.
And how they discovered, which was often on African women without suitable
pain management,
let alone consent.
Yeah.
It's pretty horrific, really. Yeah. And I really look at now, I've become much more spiritual as I've aged, and I really look at the pelvic space as this absolutely incredible, sacred space. And I mean, you just have to look at the history and the fact that, you know, I mean, Hannah Gadsby did a whole show called Douglas based on the pouch of Douglas, which is a part behind the cervix, again named after a man. And I think when you really start to understand it, when you understand that the clitoris was only discovered in 2005, and it still is the most misunderstood body part, in my opinion. It's not just for pleasure. It can't be just for pleasure. That doesn't make, I mean, people are like, why can't it? It's like, well, it doesn't make sense in terms of where anatomically where it sits that it isn't involved in birth. And so, yeah, there's a lot to this. And so I think I was just really passionate. I was in that beautiful postpartum bubble of I can do anything, like, you're a human, so I can like do anything. And also just as motherhood often puts us in this deep, raw state of connection to every other woman in the world. I'd done a lot of work. I got into medicine, and then I switched into midwifery because I wanted to work with Dr. Catherine Hamlin over in Ethiopia. And I'd done a lot of work researching, sorry, fundraising for her. I ran a marathon and raised like 30 grand for her charity. And so there was a lot of me that was like, this is a worldwide issue and we need to do something about it. But at that time, whilst there was that connection there, what I really did was to heal myself. And so I set about healing myself and got to a stage where I'd spent 6 months without wetting myself. And then I was like, went back into the fitness world and was just shocked and horrified at this place that had been my life, right? Like gym classes, like group exercise classes, were a huge part of my identity. And so I went back there to find my identity postpartum and was really shocked at how that world does not support the postpartum body. And I was really competitive back then. And I remember looking over at this woman in her 60s doing star jumps and being like, well, I have to keep up with her, right? Like I'm 30, I have to be able to do that, knowing that it wasn't right for my body at that stage. And so I got really passionate about exercise, became a personal trainer, and started teaching exercise classes that were very open. So if you leak urine, this is how you can move your body. If you have a diastasis recti, this is how you can move your body. And, you know, when you start to be authentic and real, other women feel safe to do the same thing. And what I realized is that we all have a story, and we all have. We all experience these kind of things, whether regardless of whether it's, you know, it's some of us leak urine, some of us have prolapse, some of us have back pain, some of us have weakness in the core. And so the stories just kept coming out. And so I had a couple of key friends who were like, you need to make this program online so more people can access it. And so I did that, and then COVID happened and the world was forced to realign, and I knew what was going to happen in the birth space. I knew that antenatal classes were going to be taken away for a long time. I knew that access to midwives and continuity of care would be declined, and I knew that birth trauma rates were going to increase. And so I did a free antenatal classes that are still accessible now. They've been watched by hundreds of thousands of people worldwide, and because I had worked in so many places, so many midwives knew me, and they shared the classes. And so that's how I have been able to do what I've been able to do, is really because it all just kind of beautifully flowed.
And because you've got your own story as well, like you mentioned, you'd been dealing with this from the age of 19.
Yeah, and then I had prolapse after my second birth. I don't have a prolapse now. I've healed from it when we take into consideration the new guidelines. So the new guidelines around the definition of prolapse is that you only have a prolapse if you're symptomatic. And I think that's super, super important, because I was seeing a lot of people get diagnosed that weren't symptomatic and then going down that huge spiral. And then becoming symptomatic, which beautifully shows us the emotional connection. And something that's often not really talked about is that the pelvic floor is part of our defense mechanism. And I think this is what happens for most women. What we're seeing now is that tension is the cause of our issue. So most of our belief systems around the pelvic floor is that it's this muscle that holds everything up. And that's not true. It's a part of a whole system. And so research, yeah, has shown that when we are stressed and in a sympathetically dominated state, which most of us are pregnant, labor, birth, and mother in, we know that our nervous systems are absolutely shot to pieces, typically most of the time. And so the body holds that. The body holds that tension.
And I guess even from thinking about other conversations that we've had in this space or even on this podcast as well, not only falling, well, not only pregnancy, birth, and postpartum, but also the rates of sexual trauma or the rates of pelvic pain. One in seven by the age of 45 will have diagnosed endometriosis. And it's like there's so many aspects all throughout the lifespan where the pelvic floor can be impacted.
Yeah, and I think it's not just when the pelvis is being touched or experiencing something. It can actually be like what's going on around you at that time. That can, and that's where people can really struggle to make the connection, as well. I mean, we know with vaginismus, the majority of it stems from emotional childhood trauma, and it's not actually sexual abuse. It's not that the pelvis has been connected with at all, or abused or assaulted. It's that the nervous system, and I see this in so much of the work that I do, our bodies are often stuck in the trauma still. And so that our body is stuck in that not being heard, not being listened to, not having our emotional needs met as a child. Or during pregnancy, something big happens, like we have a relationship breakdown with our mother, for example. People don't often make the connection of, oh, my body is holding this story. And often it holds that story in the pelvic space. So I do internal release work. So I spend a lot of time with inside the sacred space that is the pelvis through the vagina. So it's work that's done through the vagina, and it's really listening to the body, but also connecting what stories come up for people when they do that. And it's people are often really just blown away with, wow, that's what my space is carrying. And this is what we turn up to birth with as well. And I do a lot of birth debriefing, and it's phenomenal the stories that are connected and the state that we birth in. Most of it, this is really laboring from a wounded part of ourselves that's much younger, because we hit that point of vulnerability and we're not often given what we need in birth to really feel safe and labor and birth from that powered, powerful, centered version of ourselves that enables our body to be open and able to expand, which is so often what happens, I think, with birth, with tearing. And experiences like that, most women's bodies are actually contracted in a state where they need to be lengthened.
My initial response to that is fear, because I'm scared to put in the work, and that shouldn't be the thing that I should be initially feeling. It's like, no, this is a chance to be open to what this means and the processes of that. But it's wild to me that I'm like, oh, I'm scared of that. I would rather be ignorant to it than actually understand how much, and you mentioned, of the spiritual aspect there is to our physical body too.
I think too, there's like a lot of overwhelm in like, in pregnancy, particularly if this is your first birth, like you already don't know what you're heading into. And so it's like, okay, I need to do this. I need to do this. I need to tap into my spirituality. I don't even know what that looks like or how long that's going to take. And so then I think that's where a lot of the fear can come from is like, I've already got to do this appointment, that appointment, and now I've got to tap into this. What would be your recommendation for someone that hasn't experienced a spiritual journey but is really looking to have such a beautiful healing birth?
Yeah, I think firstly, what I want to say is I'm always really aware of the word should or shouldn't. I try and remove it from my vocabulary now, because it's, basically very much connected to the behavior paradigm, and this mentality that there's a right or wrong way. So firstly, I would honor the fear and not make it wrong. It's allowed to be there. It's actually incredibly biological. So our body is always coming from a state of protection. It always wants to protect us. And so your initial reaction is actually the beautiful body's wisdom of, oof, this feels like it's going to be big. And so fear is one of my favorite emotions to tap into, especially in this space, because often it can be deeply connected to our other stories. And so it's not actually current fear. And often the biggest thing we're afraid of is our feelings. And because feelings have never been actually made safe for us. And so we get this, you know, especially with birth people, I'm like, are you actually afraid of having a cesarean, or are you actually afraid that you'll of your feelings and what you'll tell yourself if you have a cesarean, which is I've failed. And I'm not saying that people who have cesareans have failed. What I'm saying is, when I work with people, I'm like, what's your fear? And their fear, for example, could be having a cesarean. When we unpack it more, it's like, oh, actually, no, I'm not scared of a cesarean. I'm scared of how it's going to feel afterwards. And so what we're actually afraid of is ourselves, is our own thoughts and our own feelings. And a big part of this is because it was never safe for us to feel. As an adult, I have had to retrain myself to feel safe with feelings. I've had to learn how to feel, because most of us, and there's beautiful research that shows, we don't actually know how to feel anymore. We know how to think. And that's where that overwhelm can come, because we're actually very dominant in our prefrontal cortex. We as a culture value the intellect over intuition. We value our thoughts over our feelings. People say, what do you think? We hardly ever say, how does that feel in your body? What does your body want to do right now? What does your body think about this? And so I would say, honor the fear, see what's there, and then look at the belief systems around it. And so often we've really generated this in the pregnancy space, that you have to do all these things in order to get the right birth. And so we look at life through a lens of fear rather than a lens of trust. Most of us don't have a great relationship with trust. And so we've made birth this tick box thing, and we are deeply conditioned that if we don't do things right, bad things will happen. And so we have belief systems that if I don't do all the things, then I'm going to have a bad birth. And what that leads to is a postpartum analysis of I didn't do enough, so that's why this happened. So when we have our society is very authoritarian, right? Our schooling, our government, our parenting is very rewards and punishment based. And you know, for me, I didn't want to send my son to a school that was like that. And it was really hard to find a school that doesn't do student of the week and all these things. It's like, if you're good, you get this. And if you're bad, that happens to you. And this is what we take into birth with us. So if I am good and I do all the things, then I get a good birth. And so after birth, if you don't get the good birth, we are conditioned to do one of two things: blame ourselves or blame others. And what that does is it keeps us in the cycle. It keeps us in that prefrontal cortex of problem solving. Am I the problem and they the problem? And often we're able to find evidence for both. We're the problem and they were the problem. And this is where I love birth debriefing, because birth isn't the end point. It's the beginning. And it's the beginning of the transformation that unravels us, because our children require us to step into a different version of ourselves. And each child and each pregnancy, regardless of whether our child survives, changes us and transforms us. And I think so many women are stuck in the transformation. They just don't get to complete it, because we're not held and we're not nourished, we're not supported. So what I would say to the overwhelm is, honor it. I'm really overwhelmed. What's going to feel good for me? Where do I want to go? And trusting where we want to go. If you don't want to go there, honey, don't go there. It's not right for you, right? And it's really about listening to our body and going, what feels right? Not what I should and shouldn't do. What feels like I want to, where do I want to go? What do I want to do? Life isn't a to-do list. There's no end point to any of this. And I think knowing that and bringing compassion to ourselves of, oh, this feels overwhelming, but I don't have to do it all, right? I just have to do what feels right. And this work that I do and I hold people in, it's layered, right? And you don't get to go to those deeper layers until you've done the outer layers. And so it's about trusting that. It's trusting that this is a process that continues to unravel. You know, I remember when I first came to this work of feelings and being like, I turned up to a session with my mentor, who's now my business partner, Lael Stone. And I remember saying to her, like, I remember the first session actually, I hung up and I was like, F that. I am not doing that. I was you, Chloe. I was like, that is ridiculous. I am not doing any of that ever again. I was so overwhelmed and I was so angry. And anger has been a big, anger is a big feeling for me that I've learned to work really well with. Then I shut it down and I shut it down for like 3 months and I went super numb. And that's what I needed. I didn't have the capacity to do any of this. And so trusting that, I always say, trust the numbness, trust the desire to not do it, you know, the not willingness, trust that. And then I turned up to the session. I was like, okay, I'm going to feel all my feelings in this 1 hour and then I never have to feel again. Like I never have to do this again.
That's what I do.
We talk about this a lot.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, can I schedule? Okay, I'm going to have emotions from 10 o'clock till 11 o'clock.
And you know, when our lives are very full, that's how we often have to start off and maybe stay that way for a really long time, is actually create the space for it, because it does require capacity and most of us are at capacity. So yeah, I turned up and she was like, oh, that's not really how this works. And I remember just the grief when I realized there's no end point. But now I welcome it and I honor it because it's gotten easier. It's not scary for me anymore. But 100%, I think all of us that come to this are like, I don't want to do it. So birth
was literally me like 3 weeks ago. And I think because like feelings like anger and fear and overwhelm are really loud emotions. So, and that's why they can be scary, because they can be like, they can feel like they control a lot of how you feel. So it's hard to tap into that, and it can feel really overwhelming to tap into it. But I think the point of just even acknowledging the feeling is step number one, right?
Well, compassion is step number one, and I see self-compassion and I see self-care. Like, self-care has been something that's really been marketed to us, but I see self-care as connection to self, and the ability to meet ourselves with what we need. And often we need just a lot of validation, a lot of being heard. Being heard brings so much joy and capacity, and yeah, being understood. And if we can give that to ourselves, like, I remember the first time I was kind to myself, I wanted to vomit. I was like, so I just had this like physiological response to being nice to myself. And I've done a lot of work and I hardly ever speak nasty to myself now. And if I do, I hold really good boundaries around it. Like, okay, you can slam yourself for the next 3 minutes and then that is it. But I think a part of all of this is being able to meet yourself where you're at. You know, I remember my first birth, I thought that I'd failed. And this is what happens in birth. You meet yourself no matter where you birth or how you birth, the stories come up. And I thought that I'd failed because I swore my baby out at the top of my lungs and I wasn't able to just breathe him out how I had witnessed other women do, and how I held a belief that that was the perfect, in inverted commas, way to birth. And, you know, what I hadn't done at that time was understand myself. I'm not someone who's quiet. I'm not someone who breathes, especially at that time. I wasn't someone who meditated. That wasn't me. And so I think the best thing you can do, and what I would say to that overwhelm, is meet yourself where you're at. There's no perfect in any of this. There is simply just honoring who you are and meeting your own needs. And so a big part of it is knowing what your needs are and how you're going to get them met. And I think the mistake a lot of people make with birth is they expect a version of themselves that is not true to themselves at that point. So, you know, they're like, I'm going to go in and trust my body. Okay, do you trust your body normally? Or I'm going to go in and allow myself to be supported. Okay, do you allow support now in your pregnancy? What does that look like? And we often fantasize about this version of us that actually isn't our true self in that moment. And it's not that that part of you is not capable, but we have to practice before we get into a state where we're vulnerable. Birth is not the time to all of a sudden allow something that you haven't allowed, or do something that you haven't yet done. Birth isn't a time for experimentation. And so pregnancy can be 100%. And so the biggest thing I say to people is, what do you need from birth? And then can you start to call that in now, right? So if it's support, how's support going to feel for you? What actually enables you to feel supported? And do you feel safe? Because often many of us, support is so foreign to us that whilst we want it, we don't allow ourselves to receive it. And so if that's there for you, if you're like, oof, that's landed, then it's like, okay, how can we start to build some safety and a new story that support is safe to receive?
I'm having a little laugh in my head because I'm thinking about when I did recently an antenatal course with my husband, and we were practicing massage, and he's like taller than me, massaging me from like behind on my shoulders and whispering in my ear, "How's that?" And I was like, I don't think I'm a touchy feel, like, you know, it's like in my head I could imagine this birth where he's massaging me, and I'm like, but I don't do that normally. And yeah. I think it's like, it's conflicting because when you're pregnant, it's like, okay, you've got the list for the nursery and you've got to tick box that. And then you've got to, okay, do you have all of this? And then you're so right. It's like, you can't go into birth expecting you're going to do it this way when that's not your personality type or you haven't been open to that before.
Yeah. And so it's like, well, what would actually feel good for you? Like, what would feel good for you? Is it words of encouragement? Is it actually everyone leaving you the hell alone and you being able to go into a deep dark, like, you know, like a little cave? That's what I did for my first birth. That's what I needed. I sent my husband to sleep and I labored on my own, and that didn't feel good for me afterwards. I had a lot of trauma about that, but since I've been able to unpack it, I'm like, that's what I needed at the time. That's who I was at the time. And how we turn up to every birth is very different, and who we need and what we need for every birth is different because we're a new person. So what I would have for my third birth, if I was to have a third baby, would be completely different to what I've had first and second time around. Like, I would be calling on that support now because it feels safe for me to receive it. And that's the transformation that is life as well as motherhood. So yeah, what would feel good for you, do you think?
Oh, and that's something that's so hard because it's like, how do you know until you're in it?
Yeah.
And I struggle with that.
Well, it's what you appreciate now. It's what feels supportive to you now. So if you're someone who, if your partner said, "Ah, that is amazing. You did so well in that," and you're like lighting up, then that's what you're going to need, right? You're going to need words that are like, "You're doing this, you're incredible." You know, it's really just, and this is the tricky thing. This is what we've done. We've created this whole birth preparation culture of, yes, massage and do this and do that and do this. And we're constantly telling people what they need. And that is what we're used to. We are used to other people being the experts of our own body. Right? I call us the GP culture. Most of us grew up going to the GP. And so we learn from a very early age not to trust our intuition, not to trust our bodies, but to be told what we need to do. And so much of what Core and Floor stands for, my biggest underpinning philosophy is to do you and to figure out how to do you. And my number one skill across preconception, postpartum, motherhood is connection to self. And I think we live in a culture that drives that connection away.
Can we talk about that in terms of your course, Core and Floor Restore? Who is it for? Who would it benefit in terms of, and when I'm sort of thinking about people who may be ignorant to signs and symptoms that they're having during pregnancy and postpartum, I'd like to sort of go into that as well, because some people, especially first-time mums, are ignorant to that it's not normal.
Yeah. So the biggest word I use is common, not normal, because normal has this messaging that I can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. Common means I'm not alone and this can be healed. So there's a lot of misbeliefs around pelvic floor health, and that's probably one of the biggest ones. So I have four Core and Floor Restore programs. I have a pregnancy program for people who are pregnant. I have a restore program, and that's for anyone postpartum preconception, never had babies, had 10 babies, and they're 60 years old. Like, it's the same for all of us. And it's the same theory in the pregnancy program, just the exercises are much more different. We have a men's program as well, because these issues affect men. Men have a pelvic floor. I get that, asked that question all the time. Yes, men have a pelvic floor. Then I have a strengthen program. We also do live classes, and really trying to make them super accessible for people in terms of financially. And so we do everything from breath work, because that's the first step for pelvic floor health, is the breath and looking at what the respiratory diaphragm is doing. And that often gets missed in care. People just look at the pelvic floor. They're not looking at the whole torso. So we start with breath. We've got Pilates, we've got yoga, dance, and then all my core and floor. Lengthen, strengthen, connection classes. There's a whole heap in there. So we do, yeah, the live classes and the programs, depending on what your needs are and where you're at.
Fascinating, because I think my biggest question throughout all of this is, okay, one, I can relate, and two, where do we go to start this journey? And it seems like you, through your own personal experience, but also profession and through your own studies, have gone, okay, I feel like I can do something here. So it's really nice to be able to, one, chat with you, but also allow people to come towards you where you've put something together to support people. Yeah. Exactly at this stage.
I mean, I offer so much. So I offer one-on-one chats. I've got webinars that are super cheap. My biggest thing is accessibility, because I love for everything that I do to be free, because I think we all deserve access to this. Like, our sex education at school was so poor, and we're still trying to catch up from it. Basically, that's what's happening for us as women. So I've got webinars that have a lot of information. The exercise classes, I run a mum rage exercise class. Like, I'm constantly putting in education, like in my live classes and in the programs. It's really about understanding yourself. And there's all like filtered bits of information in there all the time. Our biggest thing is, you know, to do you and to listen to your body. And I think as women, we've had to pretend that we don't have ovaries. We have to pretend that we're not cyclic. And so, you know, again, that comes back to understanding your body and exercising to how you feel.
Yeah.
And so it's very much, core and floor is very much about function over appearance. You won't ever see me post things about weight loss or body. It's really about how does your body feel and what can it do? So we have the programs, we have the live classes, I have one-on-one chats. I have a whole team that provides birth debriefs, birth preparation chats. I run motherhood villages, where we come and talk about all this stuff. And so I guide people through inner child work. There's a lot. It's just this incredible space where we get to turn up and do the work and watch others do the work, which is a huge privilege and honor. We did a session yesterday, and one of the women in there got to go back and just go back to 5-year-old her and cry like 5-year-old her really needed. And then she was like, oh my goodness, all this stuff that I've carried in my body has shifted. Like, I get to do the most amazing job. People connect to their body. That's where the power is. So yeah, there's one-on-one, there's the village. I offer training to train other health professionals in this. There's a lot. You'll see it all on my website. So I've got the Core and Floor Restore website, and then I have my business with Motheration, with Lael Stone, which is Motheration. And so we have Holding the Mother and Centering the Mother, and those programs are all around the mind and the body. So understanding our feelings, understanding mum rage, mum guilt, partner resentment, connection to our bodies, connection to our partners, relationships with others like your mother-in-law and your friends. There's exercises in there as well. There's meditations. There's rebirthing, like guides if you want to drop into your body and do stuff like that. I'm really proud of those programs. They're divine, and they're $99 for complete access forever.
And the thing is that you mentioned earlier in the podcast that you experienced pregnancy trauma, and a lot of people would use maybe birth trauma, but pregnancy trauma as well is just as real. But then also in terms of falling pregnant, that can be trauma for other people too. And then it's like, if you struggled with infertility or loss, and then also experienced a really tough pregnancy and then potentially a tough birth, then where does the healing come? And that's where I guess that motheration course is really supporting, you know, all aspects of that, regardless of what, say, trauma you experienced along the way.
Yeah, and I think this is probably what I'm really trying to get out there in the world. I really want to plant the seed. And if you take nothing away from this today, especially if you're feeling overwhelmed right now, please know healing is always possible. It really is. For our bodies and our minds, we have a system that some of you will remember learning called homeostasis. Homeostasis is our inbuilt mechanisms to come back into balance. The body is always wanting to heal. And secondly, yeah, I see so many women, and I really would love women to reach out more for really what we offer. It might be called birth debriefing, but what we're offering is emotional support and emotional healing, regardless of where you're at. So some people will also find actually have an amazing trying to conceive pregnancy and birth experience, and then they're separated from their baby, or their baby becomes sick, or they have actually trauma around breastfeeding, or they have trauma around motherhood. But often what I see is the snowball. And so I would love more women to come and have debriefs around losses, because I think we hold those losses in our bodies and then we feel them in the next pregnancy. So I often meet with women who are pregnant and actually their body is stuck in a state of either the trying to conceive period, especially if they've gone through things like IVF, or they're stuck in the loss. And so the connection to that baby and that pregnancy is compromised because of it. And it's no one's fault. No one's doing anything wrong here. But we're not holding these women and we're not holding these people and these families to be able to process that. And so often we just see it, this massive cascade, this massive emotional snowball, and women enter motherhood numb, disconnected, misunderstood, losing their selves completely. And it doesn't have to be that way. And it's actually really not that hard to support women to come back into balance, because all of the systems are in place already. It's just really about people being held. And that I had to expand my team, because I just opened a couple of bookings. I opened May and June. I'd closed my bookings for ages, and I opened them yesterday and they were booked out in like 2 hours. So I don't take people one-on-one anymore unless people beg and by email, because I'm still terrible at boundaries with that. But I have an amazing, amazing team that have undergone my training and are supported by me to hold space for others too. So there, we have a lot of capacity. My team actually has huge amounts of capacity to really hold space for people. So it's there. It sucks that you have to pay for it. I totally acknowledge that. And that means it's not accessible for everyone. But because we're online, it means people in rural and remote areas can get access to this. We're not totally, you know, we don't speak other languages and stuff like that. And I really feel, you know, for people that can't afford it and can't access it through different barriers. And just, yeah, just want to acknowledge that we're not perfect and we're trying harder. But it's hard to be able to offer it to everybody as well.
I can already think of like 20 friends and family I want to send this podcast episode to.
Yes, it's clients
like,
as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You're phenomenal.
Yeah. B, that's amazing. Like just to hear all of that and just to sort of make it real. And I think, you know, saying that should and like I should be feeling this way, this even just for myself, so much expectation that because it took so long to get pregnant and to have a viable pregnancy, I should enjoy pregnancy when I haven't. And it's just sort of all of these points are so valid, like this expectation and a lot of healing that people can do along the way.
Yeah. So, you know, I just really invite you and anyone who's feeling like that to firstly just bring compassion. Like none of us go, oh, I'm going to try and screw myself over, right?
It's so true.
You don't do that. No one does that. Everyone is always doing the very best they can with what they have. And so, you know, if I was thinking like that, Chloe, my thoughts would be, okay, I'm going to honor this. What's here for me? Well, you know what? This hasn't felt like I wanted it to feel. This pregnancy has actually been really hard. This time period has been really hard. This isn't what I want. And, you know, not getting what we want is one of the hardest things in the world, but we have been taught grit over it. So when you know, my son recently he's had two Christmases where he's been given presents by family members that he's already been given by them, right? So he's been given the same gift. And Christmas is the most exciting thing when you are 5 and 6. And so when you get one present off your grandparents and it is the same present that they gave you 3 years ago and you've already got that, that is deeply disappointing, right? Now, the older generations, and still very much many of our people in our generation, go, well, be grateful that you got something, right? Just be grateful that you got something. And, you know, and we try and fix. We listen to fix all the time. We never listen. We don't listen to hear very well. Whereas I'm like, oh, honey, that's rough. How's that feeling in your body? Yeah, you're feeling sad. Yeah, I can totally understand that. I can totally understand how sad it is to get something that you've already gotten. And so this is like, yeah, you're pregnant. And I think a big part is as well is understanding that feelings can coexist. You can be totally grateful that you've reached 34 weeks of pregnancy and hold a lot of grief that it's been the way it has for you. And often when we honor that and we allow the feelings to be there, they shift. But what I see more often than not is the body is holding on to the feelings. It's not given the space to feel. The feelings aren't validated. They're not met with compassion. And so what we actually do is we go back into our brain because that's familiar. And we will sit in a familiar hell rather than go to an unfamiliar heaven simply based on safety. Familiar feels safe. And so we will sit in those stories that don't serve us and sit in the emotional love language that doesn't help us because it's familiar. And so we go into that problem solving. I should do this. I need to do that. I need to do that. Rather than just actually sitting with ourselves and going, you know what? This sucks. And it's allowed to.
And that comes full circle with how you were saying that emotions are held in that pelvic floor as well. And it's not just the physical trauma that impacts someone's pelvic floor.
Yeah. And this is, I think this is the missing piece. It's, we need to see the whole person. And as allied health professionals, we need to treat the whole person. And when we broke, you know, I mean, you can argue how long we've been here for, but if you look at Homo sapiens, we've been here for like 350,000 years. And most of health was holistic, right?
Yeah.
And then we developed Western medicine, we developed regulations, and we developed professions, and we divided the body up. And so what you have is a machine that works as one, now divided into little pieces. So if I was trying to fix the machine, but I was only looking at one piece of it, I'm not going to be able to fix it. And this is what we've done with allied health. Physio's got muscles, osteo's got connective tissue, chiro's got bone, and psychologist's got the mind. And I think we're all doing the very best with what we have, with our training, with the spaces that we can work in. What I would love to see and what I'm going to start to offer to health professionals is more intuitive care, to be able to hold space better for our clients so that they can actually shift and to actually bring the body back together as a whole. And there are professionals out there that are doing this beautifully in all those kind of health professions that I listed already, and others. I think many are stepping away from regulations and actually offering more holistic care without the umbrella. And I think we will see more and more of that as people start to identify this. Like, we are going to gestate babies in machines, right? And I see that in our lifetime, 100%. And when you look, I mean, that breaks my heart, really, because it takes oxytocin out of it, and oxytocin is our hormone for connection. And I think as a species, we are becoming so disconnected. When we moved from the village to the nuclear family, we disconnected from the village. Then we brought in mobile phones and we disconnected from our partners, and now we're disconnected from self. And I think really what is going to save us as a species, because we're not evolving. I mean, it's your definition of evolving as well, but we're really not evolving anymore. And if we want to keep progressing for ourselves and the world, connection is the key. So I always say healing requires connection. Connection requires compassion. And I think there are two, that's where the power lies.
Which is so hard when we know that loneliness is such a big issue for so much of our population, especially our older population.
And particularly on the back of something like COVID. And, you know, I've had two babies during COVID. So, you know, certainly a very different experience to what it potentially could have been outside of COVID. So, yeah, I think connection, compassion, healing, safety, there's a lot that we've got out of today's podcast, which is, it's been fascinating. We originally were like, let's talk about the pelvic floor and all about the pelvic floor and pregnancy.
How ignorant of us.
How ignorant of us.
You know, it's like, I guess this is why we can make lists of these are the questions we'd like to ask. But then it's really like we're going to see where this conversation takes us and your approach.
I always trust it. So I trust that the listeners today needed this more than they needed the pelvic floor.
I think Chloe and I needed this more.
We're going to get Bion just to specifically help me.
Yeah, pretty much this is the podcast now is what do I need? What do you need?
They couldn't book a one-on-one with me, so they booked a
Don't bother begging via email. Just start a podcast and invite Bion.
Yeah, is this even a real podcast? I mean, you guys went all out with your
it's not even plugged in.
For people who are listening and would like to know where they can find you and your services, can we have a juicy chunk?
Give us a plug.
What chunk do you want? Instagram at Core and Floor Restore, and then the website is www.coreandfloor.com.au. Maybe it's Core and Floor Restore.
We'll link it anyway.
Well, you'll link it. And then Motheration is, it's coreandfloor.com.au. to Google it. And Motheration is motheration.au. There's no in that one. The website, there's so much. We have an online store. My husband packs all our orders. So we have lots of epic products too. So I try to offer a lot to the world for free. And that's if you liked all our free stuff and want to support us that way, the shop is a great way to do that as well, just so we can keep doing what we do and putting out into the world.
And people can find you on the podcast too with Mel.
Yeah. So the Great Rebellion is, I'm meant to be a co-host, but I really just feel like Magnus Skubanski in Hack and Kim. I'm a regular guest. I don't turn up to all the episodes. I don't do any of the work. Mel does her own thing and I'm just sometimes there. So I'm more the co-host on that. I'm more the special guest on the Magna. I think I might have to change my name.
Minus the Pash Rash.
I don't know, when my husband shaves sometimes,
that's a whole nother story.
Nice to hear you still pashing though, I think.
Bring back the pash. I've said that before. Passion sandwiches.
Well, a big thing that I talk about is taking care rather than taking score in our relationship, because 100% if I hadn't come to this work, we would be divorced by now.
Can I ask, was the start of this work with Lael Stone, or how did you begin this journey?
I began it with a relationship breakdown with my mum.
Mm.
Kicked my mum out of my house. She came to visit and I kicked her out. I held a boundary. And it was 18 months of very big feelings. And she's coming to stay in 2 weeks and I now hold compassion for her. But I think when we come to motherhood, we start to understand the childhood we had and the connection trauma. We all have connection trauma. You can sit there and think your childhood was amazing and you may have had all those big needs met, like safety and education and food and clean water. But majority of us have never been listened to be heard. I actually came to it through that. Lael had reached out and we'd done some stuff. So Lael had reached out to me. I'd met her through a friend and she'd reached out to do some Instagram lives around parenting. So I'd already connected with her in that space and I was learning a lot about parenting. But what really drove me to do the work was my relationship with my mum. And then my relationship with my partner just benefited. All my relationships benefited from me doing the work. But I remember my husband just being like, you are so epic now. You are just so epic. You're calm. Because I knew anger. I knew anger before we were foster parents. I knew anger very well. I was a ragey person, especially working in the birth space. And I think that's huge. We really need to get rid of anger in the birth space, especially in the intimate birth space.
You said you swore your child out. Is that a part of what you consider raging?
It was more around, I guess, boundaries in the birth space being crossed with obstetricians, mostly other midwives. I was just always protecting women, and so I wasn't a great colleague often. People don't feel safe in anger. And anger is a beautiful emotion. I love it. It shows us where our boundaries are and where the injustices are. But in terms of trying to make change, we don't make good change from a place of anger. We make really great change from a place of compassion. And so people feel threatened in anger and they protect themselves, and so change doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And so if we really want to progress in these spaces, like the birth world, we actually have to know what to do with our anger and come at our work very compassionately and come at our colleagues and really see their stories. Because even though people may practice and do things that you don't agree with at them in the moment, again, they're doing the best they can. And often their best isn't what women want, let alone need, but they're not doing it intentionally to hurt people. It's just what feels right for them and safe for them. And so when we start to really understand that, we can work with it better and we can work much more collaboratively. And I feel like that's probably going to be a big gift that I can give, especially the midwifery world, because we're really oppressed and we need to find our power as midwives.
My final question, if you don't mind, if you were thinking about doing a PhD, do you have a specific topic in mind, or
so I originally got accepted to do it, was going to do it with Hannah Darlin, and we were going to look at, so when you have a midwife, a continuity of care, you have a 24% decrease in preterm birth, and it's the only thing that shows that. And preterm birth is, if in moderate to high income countries, the number one cause of child mortality. So we were going to look at that, and that still really fascinates me. Someone's probably doing it now, because this was like 2017, it was years ago. I think my biggest thing that I really want to look at now is actually prolapse and birth. Birth often gets the blame for our pelvic floor issues, and it's often, our pelvic floor is often the victim, and birth is often a victim as well. The pelvic floor gets the blame and birth gets the blame. And all the research around birth and prolapse doesn't break down pushing. And so we have created a mentality and a belief system that babies have to be pushed out, they have to be forced out, and we have to actively push our babies out, when the reality is we have inbuilt mechanisms that push our babies out. We're not meant to push for 2 hours. And when we push in an active way, we're using the pelvic floor. And I laugh about this because I'm like, how have we not figured this out? We use the pelvic floor that sits underneath the baby to push. Yeah. And so often what you're doing is contracting that muscle, decreasing the space. We're holding the pelvis in a position. So when you're in stirrups, for example, the inlet, which is the top of the pelvis, is open, but the outlet is shortened. And so you're closing the hole that the baby needs to come out of. And so I'm just like, so much of what we do, no one has paused and gone, whoa, this is a, I mean, lots of us have, but the changes aren't happening, and they're not happening fast. And so I would really like to look at how people push and prolapse as well. I mean, it's so multifactorial, but yeah, so much of the evidence that goes, oh, birth ruins us. Well, did they have an epidural? Were they coached pushing, you know, or did they experience the reflex that enables spontaneous pushing? And really rewinding and looking actually at all the other factors that people have, because often our bodies actually, like prolapse is about pressure, and most of us have a decreased area in our core because we don't breathe properly. So we don't breathe into the back of the body. So all of a sudden, our torso has decreased area, and it's simple physics. Pressure equals force over area. You decrease area, you increase pressure. So many of us actually are increasing pressure simply by what we're doing with breath. Then if you look at what people do with exercise, most of us suck our belly buttons in. We don't activate the core properly because we're a pressurized unit. When we suck in, we bear down. And so, you know, if that is the pattern in the body, then the body is going to continue to do that in pregnancy, in birth, and postpartum. And so then this tiny little snippet of our life gets blamed when actually there's probably been patterns in the body for a really, really long time. So I look at my pelvic floor conditions, and I know I'm fascinated and very passionate about pooing because I was constipated as a child. I was highly strung as a child. I was a straight A student, and that was still never good enough. I also was bitten and killed by a snake, and the first time my pelvic space was penetrated was with a catheter. And so I've had to do a lot of work around being killed and resuscitated because my body has held that story for 25 years. So that has brought me to this work very deeply because I understand it in my body so much. And my nervous system. And then I was a dancer, so constantly putting that pressure on the pelvic floor by sucking in. I'm also a woman of a child of the 80s and 90s, so I have a belief system that my worth is wrapped up in what I look like, so constantly sucking in and holding in. So it's so multifactorial.
I could talk to you all day.
Yeah.
Just like keep going.
I think this is probably why I haven't done my PhD.
Yes.
It has to be narrow. Like your PhD is basically for you to learn how to write. And if you produce some good information, great. But yeah, I think it will be prolapse and pushing. But my kids need to be a bit older.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I need to write a book and it's just I need some time, I need some days to actually sit, because
you need an eighth day in the week for you.
It'll get done. I trust it will happen as it needs to, but I think the book will be the next.
I want to thank you so much for being so open about your personal journey and also sharing so much free and valuable information and putting it out there. I feel like I've even just got a lot to unpack just from this conversation.
Yes. I think you'll see both of us on your shop.
Chloe Sheen's made a purchase.
Yes, interesting.
Have you got some space to debrief with each other after this?
Yeah, we do.
Okay, good. Yeah, because that's often needed when I get off a podcast.
Absolutely. This has just been so fascinating. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you to those that listened. I hope you all got something out of it as well.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode.
If you liked it, leave us a review and follow us on socials. We'd love to hear from you.